Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Wherever you're listening from, this is Maarten Horst on ET First Contact Radio. And with me is a very special guest. Her name is Paula Harris. And Paula is a very special researcher in the UFO field. And she has been for many years. And she's really written a couple of books. So welcome to the show, Paula.
Thank you, Maarten. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Yes, and it's a pleasure to have you. And I've read what you have done, what you have written. And so tell me about how it all started with you and how you came into the UFO field and what you all have discovered. So please go ahead and talk freely.
Well, you know, it's a very unusual field. I don't think people are really pick it. And what happened to me, and it's a personal story, is that in 1979, I saw the film Close Encounters of the Third Kind by Steven Spielberg. And I was wondering, I had a very emotional reaction to the end of it when Jacques Vallée, François Truffaut plays Jacques Vallée, had the contact with the beings. And I had never done anything or in the UFO field and never read anything. But just the idea of contact really made me think. And I went to research who was a consultant, and it was Dr. J. Allen Hynek. And, of course, we all know he was a famous astronomer scientist who worked with Project Blue Book for the American Air Force. And as coincidence would have it, and, you know, my life is filled with coincidences, I met Dr. Hynek in Evanston, Illinois. He asked me if I could do his Italian translations because I am Italian. I was born in Rome, Italy. And he asked me to work with him for 6 years, Maarten. So I knew I knew it was real because I began working with a scientist, an astronomer, and my job initially was just to translate the Italian sightings. But after he died in 1986, and I moved to Rome in 1992 and lived there for 15 years, I became an expert in ufology, and that I began doing work in the field in Europe. And I would fly to the United States. I would fly to Roswell for the 50th anniversary. And I would fly all over doing this research. But I was taught by the best of the best. I was taught by a scientist.
Yes, and you have, of course, spoken to scientists and military people who are very credible. And that's why it's interesting to have you on the show, because you have had contact with very credible people. Now, of course, it's interesting if people are channeling and giving messages from the Galactic Federation and that kind of things to inform us, but it's more interesting to see real evidence and to hear it from credible people.
Well, you know, when I began, and this maybe people can identify with this, when I began working with Hynek, I used to go with him, and he used to question contactees and people that had contact. And I used to sit in the room, and I used to tell him afterwards, "These people are crazy. Are you really listening to these people? I mean, they're telling this story." And I remember he said to me, "Your job is just to listen, not to make judgments. Your job is just to collect the information." And so even though in the very beginning I was very concrete, in the 80s and 90s, I was very concrete. In other words, I was talking to military people and people who had worked in projects and astronauts and pilots, a lot of pilots. Later on, I began to realize that what Hynek was saying was true, that I could not discount the stories of people that had had contact. And it was very difficult for me because those stories, there's no way I can, you know, proving them, and there's no way of knowing for sure. But those are the stories that I think are the glue that help to put together the whole entire picture. So, I met Travis Walton, whom I'm sure you know, and I talked to him. I've talked to Stan Romanek. I've talked to, in Italy, Maurizio Cavallo, to Antonio Urzi, to people that did the Pescara case, which, you know, the mass contact case of 1957. So now, today, I have to include everything, Martin. I cannot say, you know, I can't do this and I, you know, can't listen to this. I have to include all of it, the entire research, including what we might call the paranormal.
Yes, and I must say that I became interested in the paranormal because in my program there is space for people that do scientific research like yourself and that collect data, but also people in the paranormal field that claim to have contact. And that's why it's an open program and everybody can give his opinion and his ideas about contact. And I hope soon there will be a formal disclosure, full disclosure.
Yeah, you know, what I might tell you is a story that you might identify with because, as you know, my books, and I've written five of them, are all interviews. Every one of them is interviews with the people, word for word. I take a tape recorder and I tape them, and I don't want to make a mistake, so I write down what they said. But when I went to interview, one of my biggest cases, and you know this case, is Colonel Philip Corso, who wrote the book The Day After Roswell, where he talked about being involved with the back engineering, reverse engineering program when he was head of research and development in the Pentagon in the 1960s. But when I met Colonel Corso in Roswell at the 50th anniversary, and he sat down, he didn't tell me about what he did, with the technology. What he told me was about a story he had about contact he had with an alien being. And I thought it was so, out there that I refused to print it until after his death. And I thought, well, if I print this, people won't believe him. But I made a big mistake because he was telling the truth. And what the story was, and I can tell you, is that He said that in the 1950s, he was head of a missile battalion in the Red Canyon in New Mexico. And he said that he had been told to shut his radars down because they, and he knew why, they interfered with whatever was flying up there at the time. Radars were very powerful. He said one day he didn't do that. And while he was flying over a particular area, he saw a UFO craft. And so when he landed, he took his Jeep and went out into the desert, and he saw, he said, a UFO that was materializing and dematerializing, which means you could see it one minute and you couldn't see it another. And he said that from the left-hand side of his vision, he saw a being come out from a cave. And the being had on a one-piece suit, a space suit, and the being telepathically said, and of course, Colonel Corso was startled, and he pulled out his gun, which, you know, he was a World War II veteran and a colonel, and he had a gun with him, and he pulled it out, and he pointed it at the being, and he said, friend or foe, which means friend or enemy. And the being said, neither of the two, which means neither one. And the being said to him, would you like to come aboard and see the craft? And Colonel Corso said, what do you have to offer? I know what you people are capable of. And he said, the being said to Colonel Corso, a new world if you can take it. And these, the words, a new world, if you can handle it or if you can take it, the colonel wrote on a napkin when I was doing the interview in Roswell. And he said, Paula, do you know what that means? And I said, no, I have no idea. And what I really wanted to say to the colonel was, don't tell me these stories because it's very difficult for me to print something like this. But after his death, I realized that what the colonel was telling me was, number one, he had had contact. Number two, whatever being was there said that there would be changes on the planet. And could we as humanity handle the changes? So, Martin, I hope you like that story because that really did happen.
Yes, I love the story, Paula. And I think it's one of the cases with real contact. But do you have other examples of people being in direct physical contact with extraterrestrials?
Yes, well, what one of the stories, well, there's so many. The ones in Italy are, you know, very important. And what I want to stress to researchers around the world is that the UFO phenomenon is not territorial. It does not belong to the United States. It does not belong to Europe. It belongs to the entire planet. And the story of the 1957 Pescara case, called Mass Contacts, a book written by Stefano Brescia, which can be had both in Italian and in English, is very interesting because it was an experiment that was done by some extraterrestrials, very tall people, who came to live with a small group of Italians in 1957. It's called the Amicizia case. And if people go on YouTube, they can see the Amicizia case because there's a trailer about that. These people lived in the Pescara area in contact with these Italians for almost 20 years. And it was a big secret. And there were a group of Italians that helped them. It helped them in this way that they were vegetarian, so they had to procure fruits and vegetables for them, that they would communicate through crystal radios so that they would, the radio would come on in the voices of the beings, and the beings would speak in a type of broken Italian. And what the beings told these small group of Italians in the Amicizia case was, if you can maintain harmony, and they had a word for love and harmony, it was called Ureda. Ureda, if you can maintain Ureda, we can remain with you. But the minute you begin fighting among yourselves or having disharmony, you have ruined the technology and we need to leave. They looked at harmony as a technology, which was very interesting. Their base was underwater. So what we have from this case, Martin, is that if people look up the Amicizia case, we have pictures of UFOs coming out of the water that were taken by journalists in 1957. We have photographs of the beings, and they are in the Mass Contacts book, and they're very tall. And I guess there was one very short one, too. There are different types of beings that were part of it. We have movies that were taken by Bruno Sammartino and different people of the craft right over that area, regular film movies. So years later, Stefano Brescia, who is no longer with us, wrote the book, and people in Italy began doing the research and realized this was a real case. So it answers the question, why don't beings come and live or come down here and communicate? Well, they did. But the problem was, Martin, that the group of Italians began to fight, argue, and be in disharmony, so these people could not remain on the planet, these beings. And the reason why I like telling the story of the Pescara case, of the Amicizia case, is because it lets people believe that the extraterrestrials, the ETs, all of those beings that are visiting us are not all little gray robotic beings. There, some of them are people, and they're regular people that look like us. So I think it's important to realize, and even Colonel Corso told me, is Clifford Stone, who's another one of my interviews, he actually cleaned up crashes for the United States Army. He told me that there were over 59 different races visiting the planet. So we tend to, in America, brand the alien as one type, which is the gray with the big eyes. And that is not the case.
No, I know. They're humanoids, like Nordics, Pleiadians, all different kinds of beings, even insectoids and reptilians. And they can also be benevolent, of course. And I think most of them are benevolent.
Well, actually, when the beings, when Colonel Corso said to the being friend or foe, he said neither, which means, you know, they're just here. They're here for different reasons. And I tend to think that they're not here certainly to destroy the planet. They would have done it in the time that we discovered the atomic bomb, because if you do research, you realize that most of the sightings in the United States were around Roswell or around the New Mexico, close to the Trinity site where they were experimenting with the bomb. So these beings were not on vacation. They basically were watching what we were doing because we were going into the atomic era. We were playing with very dangerous weapons. And the sightings that we had, including the latest story that I did, the 1945 crash near Trinity site, which is in my book, Exopolitics, Stargate to a New Reality, I did the interviews with the men who were there. They're now 72 and 74 years old, who saw a vehicle crash when they were children near where the atomic bomb was being tested. So I think that these visitations have always been around. I mean, I think you agree that in ancient times we've had visitations. But I think that they probably became more prevalent after our discovery of the atomic bomb. So it's very interesting to do this kind of research.
I have understood that they have prevented world wars and nuclear wars. And also, I had a guest on the show in the summer. His name is Robert Salas. Of course, you know him.
Yes.
And he said indeed that UFOs were hovering above nuclear installations. And all 40 or 50 nukes recently in 2010 were disabled.
Yes. Well, you know, the thing that's interesting is I love talking to people like Robert Salas because he was really there. And my kind of work, Martin, is not that I talk to him on the phone. Robert has been to my home and I've been speaking with him in different conferences. My work is where I speak to the real people. And you need to understand that if you look at these situations where the UFOs dismantle nuclear missiles with nuclear warheads in the 60s, and I'm sure Robert told you they also activated them in Russia you know, the old Soviet Union, they didn't let them take off and they didn't, you know, blow up anything, but they activated them, which means you can do what you want, but you cannot destroy anything because we're here. And a real interesting story that I can add for you, Martin, and I hope you get to talk to him and interview him, is I talked to Jean-Charles Dubuc, who is a pilot with Air France, who was a pilot as part of the Cometa report. And when I talked to Jean-Charles, you know, and he told me he was piloting a commercial airliner with people in it, and he saw this huge UFO over Paris. What he added was that it was over a nuclear plant. It was over a nuclear installation, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. What was it doing there? And Jean-Charles, who's very credible because he's a pilot with Air France, if the pilots don't know what they're seeing, then I'm really worried. It changed his entire paradigm. He was part of the Cometa report. The Cometa report was put out by France, and several attempts have been made with the documents to open this up. And I personally am friends with my friend, Captain Max Pudgy, who was an Alitalia 747 pilot who had on three occasions had a contact and photographed UFOs while he was flying a commercial airliner, which is Alitalia. So what we're doing, Martin, is we're ignoring the testimony of these pilots. And we have so many. And I'm very frustrated because these people are really credible and somebody should talk to them, because if they do have the situation where they have close encounter and they're flying a commercial airliner, they should have somebody talking to them. You know, because they don't know, they can make a report, but, you know, I think astronauts know already when they go into outer space the possibility of being followed by UFOs. I mean, that would be logical that some kind of briefing would be done. So why can't pilots have that too?
Yes, of course. But Paula, how can you explain, especially in the last few decades, the increase of UFO sightings worldwide and the increase of contact since the 1950s. Okay, we agree on that. How is it possible that the government and the mainstream media, is covering it up so much? What's the reason?
Well, can I ask you what you think the reason is first, and I'll tell you what I think. What do you think is the reason, Martin?
Well, I think that oil corporations and monarchies are in fact controlling this world with wealth for themselves. And then this technology, this zero point energy comes free to the public, and we can all fly with UFOs to our destiny, wherever it is, on the earth or beyond, then they will lose their power and their wealth.
Well, that's going to happen anyway, Martin. I think what's happening is that when you find a UFO as early as 1945 and 1947, you're not going to throw it in the trash. If you're going to do the recovery, and we have all the testimony of the recovery by the Army of these craft, you're not going to throw it in the, you're going to find out how it flies. And that's more than 70 years ago. Well, 73 years ago. So in 73 years, somebody has looked at the craft, the mechanism of how it flies, and it doesn't use oil and petroleum. You're absolutely right. And somebody has figured out the gravitational system, and somebody knows we don't need to use fossil fuels. But whoever that group is has to wait until the last drop of oil is used, and then they'll bring out these free energy, which will not be free. I mean, there's nothing free on Earth. And so I think that we're going down that path, because I think we will come to a point where there won't be enough fossil fuel. I think there will come to a point where either we stop using these old technologies that are causing climate change and global warming and killing the Earth, and then in the back somewhere, there's these brand new, technologies that have been back engineered. I mean, that's what Colonel Corso was speaking about when he wrote the book The Day After Roswell. So yeah, I don't get into heavy conspiracy theory, but there is a group that manages the planet. There is a group that decides the economic future of the planet. And there is a group that knows very well that can't use fossil fuel, oil, petroleum forever. So you're absolutely right. It's just, if they become illuminated to know that we need to do it immediately or we destroy ourselves, I think that's why we have all these sightings. We're being told, please change the paradigm now. Otherwise, we're in danger. You know, it needs to be changed now. You can't wait another 20 to 30 years.
It has to happen very soon. Paula, can I ask you another question? What do you think the most tax money is spent on by the American government and by all Western governments?
Well, the problem is that the group that manages the UFO phenomenon and the group that manages the technologies, these advanced, are black projects, which means that money from other, you know, money is not from the taxpayers. It's kind of funneled off from different other projects, whether it be, I don't know, some people have said it's the drug cartel, some people have said it's other money, illicit money coming in. It isn't from taxpayer money. Because taxpayer money, I don't think, can pay for everything that's happening right now either, because there's a huge deficit. Whatever the black projects, and everybody knows about the black projects, they're super secret projects. And those people who run the government, including this, you know, several presidents, not all the presidents, but several presidents, do not know anything about the black projects. And you ask a senator about UFOs or black projects or, you know, back engineering or anything like that, and the government does not know. Only, I think, you know, those people in Congress and those people in the representative field, I don't think they know. They would have to do independent research to even understand it. And I'm, you know, very close to Dr. Stephen Greer, who did brief members of Congress and who did brief Joint Chiefs of Staff and so forth. And he said they couldn't get access to it. He said that he even gave them the codes and they called and they couldn't get access to these super, super secret projects. So when I blame the government, I don't know who I'm blaming. You know, we can't blame the government. Colonel Corso said to me, Paula, the government has changed at least 10 times since 1945. I think it's a super secret group of people, and I don't think it comes from taxpayer money.
No, but what I mean is that these black projects, okay, there's a lot of money spent on it. But when I ask a question to people and I ask, what do you think the most money is spent on by the government, then they say war, of course. They think it's war. Shall I tell you where most money is spent on? It's on maintaining the status quo.
Yes, probably true.
And the status quo is that when you look Discovery Channel or National Geographic Channel, or when you read a new discovery about a new discovered planet, NASA will always tell us, okay, we haven't found life yet, but maybe we will in 2050. Okay, this kind of lies, that's where the most money is spent on, because it's to influence scientists. And you know, in the 1920s and 30s, National Geographic was a credible organization, but it is not anymore today.
Well, we have to see who owns National Geographic. You know, NASA doesn't have that big budget either. I'm not sure it's NASA. I think what NASA's doing, and NASA knows, of course, they don't have to know. There's been Gordon Cooper, who was a Mercury astronaut, had film footage of a UFO that landed, and he was very active. Gordon Cooper and Edgar Mitchell, who's a good friend of mine, has gone before the national press cover in Washington and talked about UFOs. I think there's just a vested interest in not, you know, talking about it and maintaining what you said, the status quo. But Martin, who keeps the status quo are the people. I think that the people need to, and I'm glad you have a radio show that addresses the people. The people need to ask for the truth. The people need to come down in the square and say, we want to know. And a lot of times when I do conferences and you know, as I told you, I've put all these testimonies in books. The people are so busy with their everyday life, Martin, that they don't do it anything. And when the people move, when the people say no more status quo, I think things will change. So I think radio programs like yours, I think documentaries that have come out, a lot of Dr. Greer's work, you know, with the Disclosure Project, James Fox's movie Out of the Blue. You know, the people, there are people that are trying to change this.
Yes, of course. There's a large group now. And if you see how many people are on Facebook and on the networks, and if you know how many YouTube movies there are with testimonies, documentaries, UFO sightings, it's amazing. So let's have a little break with the Intergalactic Cruise Mix, which is a very special synthesizer mix from the late 80s when space music was still a hype. So let's go back to that time and enjoy the big artwork from those people like Jean-Michel Jarre and Vangelis.
Thank you. procedures are retracting in and extending the probe.
Back to the space age. Welcome back to ET First Contact Radio. Yes, this is lovely music, and it reminds me of the 80s where Star Trek was popular, and we have Paula here. Paula Harris, she is a wonderful researcher in the UFO field. Welcome back, Paula.
Thank you, Martin. And you talked about Star Trek, and I'm a Star Trek fan because I studied Gene Roddenberry and his vision of the Galactic Federation and of a society that doesn't have an economic base, but has and living with diversity, all different kinds of aliens, is just amazing. And I'm sponsoring a conference in Florida, May 9th through 12th, where I have Star Trek and NASA as a main focus, because I think that vision, the Roddenberry vision, is a very important vision.
I just had Star Trek. I'm season three, the third season now from the Next Generation.
Yeah, but he was inspired, Roddenberry. I mean, he was downloaded with a lot of scenarios that are very important for Star Trek. He was way ahead of most people, and Star Trek has such a great following because all over the world. When I was in Italy, there were Star Trek conferences where thousands of people used to go. And you wouldn't get thousands of people at a UFO conference, but you'd get 2,000 people going to a Star Trek conference. And I think that those people had a vision of the future. And Roddenberry was very inspired.
Yes, definitely. Because the idea of the Galactic Federation, or the Federation of Planets, is exactly what all those channels are receiving. And the idea of different races living together and exploring the universe, because that's exactly the aim of the Galactic Federation.
Well, it needs to be. I mean, people need to coexist in the universe. We are not alone. We've never been alone, and I think most intelligent people know that's the case. My interest is one just historically to record it. And anymore, I don't know where it's going to go. So what happens is that 100 years from now, 200 years from now, when people go into a library, they'll find the words that are in my books, of the exact words of people like Dr. Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut, people that I've interviewed, military people, even Robert Salas, all those people that live this reality, that are will no longer be with us. Their words will be forever immortalized in the library. So we have them now, and that's what's important.
Yes, and maybe there will be an archive of all the BBS radio shows that were done in this time.
Well, I hope so, because, I mean, people will want to know. I mean, the students of the future, it will be a reality. I mean, it has to be. It's logical. Yes. That it will be a reality 200 to 300 years from now, because, the human race will evolve. And this is all that will be left of that kind of, testimony, that kind of discussion.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sincerely hoping that there will be a formal disclosure very soon.
Well, I don't know. I don't think it's going to come out of the United States. I think formal disclosure has already happened. I think anybody that looks at everything that's happened will see that it doesn't have to come from the president. I mean, just because nobody mentions it doesn't mean it's not real. I think there's so many, really credible people that have come forth to talk about this. And I think countries like France that have the Cometa Report, Brazil that opened up its files, the Ministry of Defense in England that is allowing us to look at their UFO files. Even Italy has in their Air Force has a section on UFOs. I think that those countries all together are doing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're the BRIC nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, the BRICS nations. They also want disclosure.
Yeah, and they're opening up their files. They're helping. I think that the reason why no government disclosure will ever come forth probably in the United States is because that's where the technology is. And you can't say to the world, guess what? We've been not telling the truth since Roswell. Roswell did happen, because the problem even with Roswell, and we know what happened. I mean, I've interviewed the people there, and there's the books of all the witnesses that were present, including Jesse Marcel Jr., who was a guest in my home in Rome, who told me his father brought home pieces of something very unusual. His father knew the difference between a weather balloon and something unusual. You know, the thing is that they would have to, the Air Force would have to backtrack, because officially the Air Force says it was a Mogul weather balloon. So you'd have to tell the people you were lying. And I think that that's not going to happen. I think that other things will happen. And I don't know, maybe it'll be the ETs or the extraterrestrial presence that will be so massive that nobody can deny it.
Yeah, you know, 2 weeks ago, I had a guest on my show with the name Judy Satori, and she put out a YouTube video for December 21st. She's a spiritual channel, but she has a beautiful message. And the star people are telling her that very soon they will come in large numbers, and the numbers will be so large that no government will be able to deny that they're here.
That's true. We got another problem, though, with all of this, and that's why I write books on exopolitics, is that over a period of time, I've interviewed people around the Area 51, you know, situation, and anymore, we have very advanced created vehicles that look like UFOs. So if it's over a military base, I don't know whether it's our technology or their technology. So I do believe we have back engineered a few UFOs. So anymore, I'm wondering, you know, what are we looking at? So whoever comes from interplanetary space or interdimensional space has to make, you know, contact, and we have to know the difference between our stuff and their stuff. And that is that's been a problem. If people know that, you know, and I do believe Bob Lazar, and I do believe the people I've spoken to who worked at the Area 51 base, that we've have vehicles that resemble UFOs, that will be a problem of the future.
Yes, I agree with you, but maybe we can expect from a country like China or Russia to make a formal disclosure.
Yeah, we could either do it there, or if we have the possibility of traveling among the stars, maybe we will get the real truth about, you know, planets and the moon and everything and Mars and the other planets, that all the material that has been hidden from us, you know, about, you know, inhabitants of planets, of different planets and you know, bases on planets and so forth, and we get some of the truth there, we may be able to see the whole entire picture.
Yeah, there are even bases on the moon. And then, do you know this guy, William Stillings? I had him on the show. He was a Mars traveler. He is also involved in exopolitics.
What's his name?
William Stillings.
Oh, okay, that's the group. Yeah, well, I think time travel is you know, real, and I'm not sure how advanced we've done, you know, we've been in time travel, but I think it's real. I know that there's several big conglomerates that are interested in time travel. Of course they would be interested in it. It's part of the mystery. It's all part of the mystery. So, yeah.
I have the feeling that there are other dimensions that exist above the physical third dimension, the fourth dimension, which is time, and then the fifth dimension. And I think those ETs are vibrating on a higher level of existence, a higher reality.
They probably are. And also I think that it isn't just now that they've been here. I mean, we have to go back to ancient times and ancient civilizations to understand the whole entire picture. And that, I think, Martin, that's why it's so complicated, because we have to rewrite history books. I mean, the history books, the way we're reading them right now, is not true. I just came back from Sardinia, and I was doing some research there. I did a little conference in Sardinia, which is an island off of Italy, and they're showing me artifacts of 15-foot-tall people, you know, which is hidden archaeology. They're showing me teeth. I saw artifacts. There's bones from these people. And so where in our history does it say that there were 15-foot-tall people who walked the earth? Only in mythology. And yeah, what if mythology is real?
Exactly. And you know that there was an archaeological site in Iraq where they found a 20-meter-tall being. And they demanded, the archaeologist that was wiping off the dust from the skull was just half of the size of the skull only.
Well, yeah, and it's very interesting. And the people that I was talking to in Sardinia told me, too, that they had been threatened, that this was not part of modern archaeology, that they, you know, that they couldn't talk about it, that it was top secret. And I thought, well, yes, because we have to rewrite everything. I mean, we have to change everything, the whole idea, our whole entire paradigm, the way we think, who was here, who, you know, all of it. And it's such a big task that I think that the powers that be, the rule of the planet, think it's not worth it. And it is kept secret.
Yes, unfortunately. Yes, I have to admit. But I hope that there will be interference from, you know, there's a guy called, what's his name? Benjamin Fulford. He's speaking about high-ranking societies, the White Dragon Society, that are trying to take over those powers that are, and to force them to give up their power so that there can be formal disclosure. So there are groups of very wealthy individuals who are working towards freeing our planet from those lies.
Well, you know, after all the work that a lot of researchers have done, and you know, we've done a lot of work, and it's work that we, that, you know, we sponsor ourselves and so forth. I mean, a whole list of researchers, from Stanton Friedman to, you know, you mentioned Robert Salas, to Stephen Greer, to a whole bunch of people that have worked in this area. You know, I'm hoping in my lifetime, because it's been 30 years now, and in my lifetime, that the truth will come out, that it won't be 200 years from now, you know, or later on. I'm hoping that the paradigm shift will happen from 2013 on.
Yes, well, my gut feeling tells me it's soon, and I hope it's soon.
Yeah, well, you know, it'll be very important. You and I have had a talk about bringing on board Antonio Urzi from Italy, who is filming these amazing craft. And he has his own philosophy about what's happening and what's going to happen, and how it's also the heart of Mother Earth and the heart of the sun. And the galaxy is reacting, because we are part of one big galaxy. And I love the way he puts the philosophy forth about this. And so we can look forward to hearing that in the future.
Yes. Yeah, folks, you should know that on ET First Contact Radio, we'll have him on January 24th, in exactly 3 weeks from now.
Yeah, and he basically, his philosophy, even though he doesn't say he gets messages, he just feels when he can film, and he's filmed some amazing footage of metalcraft and lightcraft. He has a philosophy about what's happening to the Earth, the Mother Earth, and I think it's very beautiful. And I kind of agree with the fact that Mother Earth is fed up with all the things the human beings, you know, human beings are doing to it. So that's a very beautiful way of looking at nature and our connection with nature.
Yes, Paula. Yes, indeed. Well, I'm looking forward to having him on the show. And I think it will be a very interesting show to do together.
Yeah, and I'm just doing the translation, but that's what my job is. And all the books I've written, and I have three in Italian for the Italian audiences, three books in Italian with Edizioni Verdechiaro. that basically the what it is just reporting, and I'm just going to help with that because I'm doing the translation for you, but it's just recording what other people say, which I think is very important.
You know what's so beautiful about that is what I can see development on several websites. The Disclosure Project, the names that you have named, Stephen Greer, yourself, and all the other hosts on BBS Radio, and there are also other radio stations. We are all linking up together now, and we are really working together like a team. People like yourself, I have never met you in life, but because of the internet and because of BBS Radio, we are able to spread the message to a large audience.
Well, but thanks to you who created this. I mean, you created this for the large audience, and a lot of people have created alternative media, social network media. But I hope people still get the information from the source. So I'm going to encourage them, because really, I think if you're intelligent, you'll put it all together. You'll connect all the dots and see the whole picture, because people ask me what the story is, and I just say, you can figure it out. You figure it out. You go and read what everybody says. Talk about time travel, talk about dimensions. You figure it out, because we're intelligent people.
Mm-hmm. Maybe just in a few seconds you can tell the title of your book and how people can contact you. But I just want to say, if you subscribe to the archives of BBS Radio, you'll be able to hear all the interviews and from the other hosts that are on BBS Radio. And if you want to give a donation, go to bbsradio.com/ET First Contact Radio. And Paula, so tell me how people can reach you, and what's your website, and what are the titles of your books that you have written until now?
Well, they could just go on the website and look. My name is Paola, because I'm Italian, Paola Harris, Harris. And my website is www.paolaharris.com. And the latest book I wrote is UFOs, How Does One Speak to a Ball of Light, which includes orbs and interdimensional beings. And it's also all interviews. But I'm sponsoring a conference in Florida in May, and that conference will have the former defense minister of Canada. It'll have the Betty Hill, Betty and Barney Hill case, Kathleen Martin. It'll have Stan Romanek. It'll have Yvonne Smith. And that is in Florida and Sebring. And to go on that website, it's www.starworksusa.com. And that has the Star Trek NASA theme. So people can just go on the two websites. And I have a Facebook page, because that's where we met. And they can see what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yvonne Smith is one of the guests that I still want to have on my show, and I'm going to invite her as well.
Oh, I hope you do, because I think she's the foremost hypnotherapist, a very wonderful lady. She has the same philosophy as Dr. John Mack, which is that she does not put the contact in any box. She listens to the people and is very broad-minded.
Yeah, well, so are you, Paola. You have done a lot of work for 30 years, and you have collected a lot of information in your books. I want to thank you. Go to www.paolaharris, P-A-O-L-A, Harris with double R, .com, and connect to her if you're interested in her books. So, unfortunately, we have to sign off now, Paola, but I will speak to you again on January 24th. Maybe we'll have our Italian friend
Antonio Uzzi.
Yeah, Antonio Uzzi, and he will share a beautiful story with us.
Thank you, Martin.
All right, so now we sign off, and I wish everybody a pleasant continuation of the day or night, wherever you're from. And I'll be back next week with another beautiful, interesting guest. Thank you, Paola.
Thank you.